Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Always a great pleasure to have your company. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn, Germany.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. We are live on air and on Facebook. Coming up, Switzerland agrees to return millions of stolen dollars to Nigeria. But can the new government be trusted with all that money?
To be honest, it's difficult to say. We know the president is fighting corruption, but the issue is that not everybody surrounding the president believe in this fight against corruption.
Clashes between traditional rulers in northern Ghana leave at least six people dead.
It's a long-standing chieftaincy dispute around that. It's been long. Even the traditional rulers of Ogaland have tried resolving that issue.
And world leaders urge U.S. President Donald Trump to maintain Jerusalem's status quo. We will find out why in just a little bit.
A great lineup of stories waiting for you after we hear about other stories making headlines around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. We start off in the U.S. where a planned speech from President Donald Trump regarding Jerusalem has elicited sharp reactions globally, some saying that if he goes ahead with the expected recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital city, then he could plunge the Middle East into crisis. Here in Germany, the leader of the Social Democratic Party, Martin Schulz, spoke out strongly against President Trump's intentions.
Ich finde, Präsident Trump untergräbt mit seiner angekündigten Entscheidung die internationale Stabilität.
In my opinion, President Trump is undermining international stability, a stability, by the way, that has been protected and influenced by the U.S. for a very long time. Europeans cannot remain silent in the face of such development. And that is why we, as Europeans, need to find a common security policy, foreign policy, and a common international stance.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has dismissed reports that President Donald Trump plans to fire him. Tillerson brushed off the reports in Brussels, where he's attending talks with EU and NATO leaders.
You know, this is a narrative that keeps coming up about every 6 weeks. And I would say y'all need to get some new sources because your story keeps being wrong.
Now to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where over 1.7 million people have fled their homes this year due to violence. According to a report released today by the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, that number is more than the number of people who have fled Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. The aid agency said this makes DR Congo the worst affected by conflict displacement in the world for the second consecutive year. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Hundreds of Nigerians continue to arrive in Lagos after being repatriated from Libya by the African Union following footage that showed African migrants being auctioned off as slaves. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's special assistant, Abike Dabiri Erewa, has been assigned the duty of receiving the migrants, and she says their stories are heartbreaking.
One 14-year-old girl said to us she doesn't know how many men have slept with her. She can't count. So it's heartbreaking. I mean, I can't even describe how I feel seeing them, especially for the small girls. You know, you look at them and you wonder whether their lives could ever be the same. But that is our responsibility, to help them get their lives back on track.
The African Union and member states intend to repatriate more than 15,000 migrants stranded in Libya by the end of the year. And finally, police in Rio de Janeiro have arrested one of Brazil's most wanted drug barons in a massive operation that included armed forces. Wednesday's capture of Rogério Avelino da Silva represented a rare victory for authorities in Rio. The city is struggling to stem a rise in violence a year after hosting the Summer Olympics. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com, or our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyinge.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Remember, we are live on Facebook, so do feel free to drop us a line with your comments on the stories we are airing and share the live stream with your friends.
And now, Nigeria just became $300 million richer. This comes after Switzerland agreed to return $321 million to Nigeria that was seized from the assets of former military dictator General Sani Abacha. He has been accused of stealing as much as $5 billion during his time in power. Abacha took power in a coup in 1993 and died under suspicious circumstances in 1998 while he was still in office. For more on this, I spoke to DW correspondent Samuel Okoya, and he began by describing how Nigerians received the news.
Essentially, Nigerians are happy about this, that money that genuinely belongs to the people was taken away by just one man, and then ultimately we are getting this money back. And it's quite important that at this time, Nigeria is really, really short of cash. So whatever comes in terms of stolen money coming back to Nigeria is quite a welcome development to Nigerians.
And is there any word as to why it took so long for Switzerland to give back this money to Nigeria?
Well, there was a long negotiation on the modalities under which this money will be given back. As you may know, in the past, there had been allegations that when stolen funds from Europe is returned to Nigeria, such money is stolen again and sent back to Europe. And I think the Swiss government, which was in possession of this money, wants to ensure that such a thing does not happen.
And so you're confident, or more or less sure, that this money, when it comes back, it will not be stolen again?
To be honest, it's difficult to say because, we know the president is fighting corruption. But the issue is that not everybody surrounding the president believe in this fight against corruption. A wide degree of corruption still exists in the Nigerian system. We just hope that the external monitors in terms of the Swiss government, the World Bank, and others who will monitor this will be able to ensure that loopholes are not exploited to the extent that this money gets into private pockets and ultimately goes out again.
Presumably, this will be seen as a victory for President Muhammadu Buhari's fight against corruption and money laundering. But I guess it's not just him. Who else should take credit for this?
Well, I think credit should also go out for foreign organizations like the Swiss government that were able to actually ensure that in bringing back this money, we don't run into the kind of problems we've had in the past. The EFCC has been doing quite a wonderful job.
Can you specify what the EFCC is?
Economic and Financial Crime Commission is the body charged with fighting corruption in Nigeria. And one of its goals is to recover billions of dollars of public funds that have been stolen. And this body has done a lot of work in Nigeria and is collaborating with foreign governments to ensure that some of the stolen money that have been taken abroad are brought back.
DW correspondent Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Now, we did ask on Facebook what you think about this move. Lamin Fofana says it's good news for the government and the people of Nigeria, but all these ideas of politicians in Africa taking money from their nations is an act of witchcraft and robbery.
And Gordon Obeng Boateng says these people steal with impunity while their people suffer. The saddest part is they never invest in the economy. Are they bringing the money to Nigerians with interest? The West still benefits from us.
Antoinette asks, where to Nigeria? To someone else who will take it to another overseas account?
And Funmi Ishola says only God knows how much more is out there. That's a huge sum.
Yes, for sure. And now we take you all the way to the USA, and Arabs and Muslims across the Middle East are on the edge as they anticipate President Donald Trump's announcement recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Even the anticipation of this announcement has inflamed Muslims' feelings worldwide and brought further chaos and instability to a region already crisscrossed by war and disputes. Pope Francis has joined the fray calling for the status quo of Jerusalem to be respected to avoid further conflict. So, why could such a move be controversial? DW's Sarah Kelly posed this question to Marcus Keim, an international security expert.
It has a legal dimension and a political dimension. The legal dimension is the status of Jerusalem is has to be determined in international negotiations. Eastern Jerusalem, or Jerusalem as such, has been annexed by Israel in 1980, but that annexation has never been recognized by the international community. So the final status in legal terms has to be determined. And Jerusalem is one of the key questions of the still existing Middle East peace process. And declaring or accepting that Jerusalem is Israel's capital means taking sides in this context.
Why would Trump do this now? I mean, it seems the message that we've heard from the pontiff himself is that this is an unnecessary provocation.
Absolutely. I think there are two things to consider. First, Donald Trump is in the process of fulfilling a lot of campaign obligations and projects, and this is one of them. And the second thing is that the United States has been engaged in trying to mediate between the, Israel and the Palestinians over the last couple of months, behind the scenes, very silently. And obviously, they have come to the administration has come to the conclusion that there's nothing to gain from it, that there are no that there is no progress in the negotiation, and that the recent move announced or to be announced will not really change the situation on the ground.
Do you anticipate that we are now going to see violence?
Absolutely. I think the United States itself is expecting violence. As far as I've seen this morning, the U.S. administration has given a warning to the U.S. embassies and consulates all around the world that they are expecting violence, in particularly in the Middle East, but maybe in other places as well, maybe even violent attacks on the U.S. consulate and embassies. It's really fueling the not only fueling the conflict, but fueling violence in the region.
Marcus Keim, an international security expert.
Now, at least six people are feared dead with scores injured following gunfire exchange between the Kalampor and Kafaba ethnic groups in northern Ghana. The two farming communities have a long-standing chieftaincy dispute over who is the rightful ruler of the Kafaba and Kalampor traditional areas. As Maxwell Sook reports from Tamale, northern Ghana, small arms proliferation in the region makes it even harder to resolve the dispute.
According to local media reports, hundreds of residents have fled the community following the violence. One resident, who goes by the name Mumuni, told me via telephone that the fighting had left several injured.
Some people are wounded and we are trying to get them to safety. We don't know those who came to attack us, but what we do know, it is about the chieftaincy dispute in this village.
The police have since been deployed to restore order in the community. Al-Hassan Isahaku, the Northern Regional Coordinating Director, who is also the Secretary of the Regional Security Council, said the dispute has to do with the chieftaincy issue.
It's a long-standing chieftaincy dispute around that. It's been long. Even the traditional rulers of Gojaland have tried resolving that issue and so on.
An estimated 2.3 million illegal small arms are already in the hands of civilians in Ghana. Security analyst at the Kofi Annan International Peace Center, Kwesi Enning, said Ghana was the largest importer of industrial explosives in Africa and was a great threat to the country's peace.
If we look at Ghana, 2.3 million small arms, totally unregistered and in civilian arms, the single largest importer of industrial explosives on this continent, you can begin add the
chieftaincy and communal conflicts are common in most communities in northern Ghana. The Regional House of Chiefs, one of the institutions set up to handle cultural and chieftaincy issues, is overwhelmed with cases of such nature.
Maxwell Sook in Tamale, northern Ghana.
Now, Crispin, allow me to take you back to the top story, where Switzerland will return to Nigeria around $321 million. We've been getting overwhelming responses. Rwanu Ibrahim from London says it is very interesting news, but the problem is that wretched people will not benefit from all this surplus money.
And David from Nigeria says, we have been hearing that for many years ago. Still, I'm getting older. We are still on the same story of the Nigerian government lying to the citizens and world at large.
Musibao says, thanks to the Switzerland government, today's event, history tomorrow. The Nigeria ruling party APC should make use of the money in proper ways. They should fear God not to loot the money again.
Yeah, it's a concern whether they will actually use this money to benefit the people
after
so many years being in Swiss accounts. Namdi says Switzerland should be included in the list of corrupt countries. But no, I don't think it will be. The word corruption appears to have been reserved only for Africa. Nobody talks about the countries that harbor these illicit funds. Very good comment from him there.
Yeah, to wrap up, one comment here from Katenge, who says, very good for Nigeria. Hope the leaders in power will not divert it into their own accounts.
Keep it Africa Link, and we'll be right back.
In case you've just joined us, you are listening to Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. And still to come in the next 15 minutes, Sierra Leoneans are disappointed after their 709-carat diamond fetches less money than expected.
If we don't know what a diamond is, why do we rip our country in that manner just to sell our resources for pittance? We don't need to.
But first, Crispin, allow me to take you to Kenya, where the third UN Environment Assembly came to a close today in Nairobi with four more countries, among them South Africa, joining the UN Environment Clean Seas campaign. This is a campaign aimed at stopping the dumping of plastic litter, sewage and other waste in seas and oceans. Some 40 countries, which mainly account for more than half of the world's coastline, that is from Kenya to Canada and Indonesia to Brazil, have so far joined the hashtag Clean Seas campaign to stop further damage to sea life. Kenya set the ball rolling by banning the use of plastic bags, a move which has received international backing. Ruben Kiama has more on this report from Nairobi.
The commitment by countries to counter dumping of plastics and litter in oceans comes timely as reports indicate that 7 million people die each year from environmental pollution. In Kenya, attention has been on effecting the plastic ban 5 months after the decision. Geoffrey Wahungu, Kenya's National Environment Management Authority Director General, spoke about his country's journey to success.
As we speak today, our inspection teams are still out, but every day we gather information and we hope we do not have our citizens there. So we have had about 60 arrests, by and large, about three manufacturers and about six distributors. The rest are Kenyans who, when they are arrested, we just ask them to direct to us where they bought, and the chain goes until we can find the person who is actually producing it. That is the person of interest to us. We just want to cut the source. We can promise Kenyans that we want to clean up Kenya for you.
But there are still some challenges posed by the plastic ban. Wamboi Mbarire is the chief executive officer of the Retail Traders Association.
The education needs to continue so that we're looking at the hygiene element and ensuring that we do not again create a new problem. There have been a few challenges, especially with the primary packaging, which was the second part of the ban. I think we are slowly working through that in terms of exactly what is primary packaging and how can it be implemented. Again, for the supermarkets, is a challenge of imported goods.
And as the United Nations Environment Assembly came to a close, the challenge is on governments to come up with laws that press companies and citizens to change their wasteful habits. Governments, individuals, businesses, and other organizations are expected to sign the pledge and help beat pollution around the world. For most of the young delegates, talk and implementation will go hand in hand. Listen to Elizabeth Wanjiru, a budding environmentalist.
Okay, one of the key takeaways is that we've seen the involvement of the young people. And in fact, I was excited to meet the youngest delegate in the house, who is 7 years old, Elaine. And she's so passionate about the environment. So I think these are some of the things that we need to be bringing on board. You've come across different young people from different organizations. And we've had so many exhibitions and expos going around, and different organizations, NGOs, the government. And everybody is sitting down and discussing on how we can be able to beat pollution together. So I think if whatever has been discussed in this assembly is going to be implemented, then together we are going to beat pollution.
Studies say humans have already dumped billions of tons of plastic and are adding it to the ocean at a rate of 8 million tons a year.
Ruben Kiama in Nairobi.
On the spot.
Now, how do you reject $7 million and then accept $6 million? That's the question many Sierra Leoneans are asking themselves after their 709-carat diamond, known as the Peace Diamond, sold for $6.5 million at an auction in New York. Initially, the Sierra Leonean government had turned down a $7.8 million bid for the rough diamond, which is one of the largest ever to be discovered. From Freetown, Claudia Anthony reports about the disappointment residents are feeling.
Despite a huge amount of money spent on insuring the precious stone while being transported abroad, staging the auction and other related expenses, the 709-carat gem named Peace Diamond sold for $6.5 US in New York. That's $1.3 million less than what was offered at the Freetown auction earlier this year. This significant price difference has become a hot debate on the country's social media platforms, with many wondering what, if anything, went wrong. Efforts to get the government to comment on the sale were unsuccessful. Yasmin Joshu Sharif is a prominent lawyer and women's rights activist. She suggests that the government of Sierra Leone should be more open to sharing information with the public.
They should have spent more time keeping the public informed why it was taking so long, why it was so hard to find someone who was ready to take the diamond abroad, why they didn't accept the first offer, which turned out to be the higher offer.
Other people like Elijah Gegwa are appalled by the sale and the very idea to even auction the diamond. He is chief executive officer at Culture Radio, a community radio station in Freetown.
I'm not impressed to begin with. I am very much disappointed. And most importantly, I thought they will come to some reason whereby they will say, please let's have this diamond kept in a safer place so that school-going people, young children will go to this place and look firsthand at a diamond. If we don't know what a diamond is, if we don't know the value of these things, why do we deal with them in the first place? Why do we rip our country in that manner just to sell our resources for pittance? We don't need to.
The largest diamond found in this country was the 968.9-carat Star of Sierra Leone, discovered by miners in 1972. The Peace Diamond is the second largest ever discovered in this country. It was found by a Christian pastor who gave it to the government to deal with the sale. The United Nations lifted a ban on diamond exports from Sierra Leone in 2003, but the industry worth $113 million is plagued by smuggling. Lawyer Jusu Sharif thinks the pastor's action will help curb smuggling of the gem.
Since the man who found the diamond is going to get his commission, he doesn't have to do anything illegal, he doesn't have to put himself at risk. I think it's a good idea. That's a huge benefit because I know in the past people got into a lot of trouble trying to smuggle diamonds out of the country in so many ways.
It was Sierra Leone's diamonds that fueled an 11-year-long civil war, which left 50,000 people killed by the time the war ended in 2002. Armed rebels of the Revolutionary United Front forced thousands of civilians in the east of the country to mine the stones. The proceeds were used to purchase weapons from which the term blood diamonds emerged.
Claudia Anthony with that report from Freetown. And Zipporah, you can imagine the disappointment that the Sierra Leoneans are feeling. First, you are offered a lot of money.
Yes.
And then you go for less money. It doesn't really make any sense.
It doesn't meet logic in business. Yeah.
Not at all. Anyway, we have some comments. I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, I'll start with the first one here from evangelist Trevor Mwamba, who says the government should have not sold the diamond on that price. That's the worst decision ever. Oh, my Africa.
Elijah Awule says the West will always steal from us when we walk to them, even with our resources. But let them come and get it here and we will not be cheated anymore.
Victor Emejori says after he read this, he remembered the movie Blood Diamonds. And he says kudos to Pastor Momo.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are still now wondering whether it was a wise decision for the pastor to give this diamond to the government after receiving less than was expected. But obviously, it was for him.
A right move.
Yeah, exactly. So. And it is meant actually to encourage others, if they find such kind of discoveries, to do it legally, not to smuggle the diamonds out of Africa, which is even worse. Anyway, let's keep going with our next story.
Living Planet Africa.
Yes, and our next story takes us to Congo. Did you know that the Congo Basin stores a third of the world's tropical peatland? pits, bogs, or moorlands, as they are called, are dead and decaying material found in wetland. They are said to be useful in collecting carbon dioxide, but if the forests around them are cut or converted into farming, the dried-out pit emits vast quantities of carbon dioxide. Now, a team of scientists are looking into the moorlands in northwestern Congo, pushing for its conservation. Kosivite Soy visited the carbon-rich swamps in Lokolama, and his report is now presented by Julia Heinrichmann.
Behind the village is dense swampland. Satellite images have revealed the existence of a peat bog here in the forest. Biologists say it's one of the most important ever discovered. That's why a team of British and Congolese scientists have embarked on a joint research project. Getting to the peat bog involves an arduous, hours-long hike through the swamp. Everything is soaking wet. English geographer Simon Lewis has been surveying here for years, trying to better understand the development of the bog, which began forming tens of thousands of years ago.
But what is the surprise is that we thought the peat here would be maybe 50 centimetres, maybe 1 metre maximum. And actually we've got much deeper peat. So that suggests that potentially, we haven't done all the work yet, but potentially there's even more carbon stored on this side of the Congo River.
The scientists now calculate that the bog is far bigger and deeper than they originally estimated. The peat layer is up to 6 metres thick in places and covers an area about the size of Great Britain. That's why maintaining the area is so important for the environment. The forests of the Congo Basin are under ever-increasing pressure. Similar primeval woodlands in Asia have already disappeared, and deforestation is now also a threat in this part of Africa. Illegal loggers are taking down more and more trees. Meanwhile, the government is granting licences, some, according to environmental groups, under dubious circumstances. But as local populations grow, so does the need for arable land, to plant cassava, for instance. Farmers like Valentin Egobo say they have no choice. To acquire new fields, they say, they have to drain at least some of the moors.
We have to maintain a balance between preserving nature and survival. Yes, we need alternatives to deforestation, but it's not that easy.
There are no projects in place to help people pursue other livelihoods. That's why the environmental organisation Greenpeace has stepped in to support the scientists financially and logistically, and to teach the villagers more about why environmental protection is vital. A government official explains the difficulties the country is facing.
We would have to provide aid to the people here so they don't take resources from the forest. But such projects cost money, money the government doesn't have. That's why we need the financial support of the international community.
The activists say it's imperative to develop a strategy that provides financial support for the entire region. Otherwise, the Congolese authorities will continue to permit logging, which will eventually lead to the release of vast amounts of sequestered CO2. But it'll take months to record and analyse all the data they've collected, providing more insights into one of the largest carbon reservoirs on the planet.
That report was written by Kosivi Tiesou. And first, let me acknowledge all our listeners, because you can see on our Facebook page that we are very busy. We have someone who's listening from Tanzania, Machimu Mutemi. And of course, there's someone from Nigeria who says, who's talking about corruption in Nigeria. That's why we go to the same topic, Crispin.
Right. And two multi-million dollar penthouses belonging to Nigeria's former oil minister, Diezani Alison Madueke, have been seized as part of corruption investigations. Alison Madueke, who served under former President Goodluck Jonathan until 2015, was arrested in London in October 2015 as part of a British probe into international corruption and remains on bail. We asked you, what do you make of this seizure?
Yeah, and Mnodo Chris says, let the British prepare to arrest former President Olusegun Obasanjo, Abdul Salam Abubakar, and many others. What are they waiting for? Let corruption fight start from the beginning, not from the end.
And Nwachi Nemelu Kitakita says, what about Yaradua's wife? Nobody's talking about her. What about the father of corruption, IBB? That's former President Ibrahim Babangida. Nobody's talking about him. What about Abdul Salam Abubakar? No one cares. Do you want to know why? Yeah, of course, I think we all do want to know why. And he says they are all northerners.
That's another look. Ifeani John Micah says how many northern corrupt politicians have been arrested by the so-called British probe on international corruption? If she's from the northern part of Nigeria, she will still walk free just like every other corrupt politician.
And last but not least, MK Sani says let her be brought back to Nigeria. A maximum prison should be opened for her corrupt type in Sambisa Forest. Why asking Nigerians a question from Germany? And of course, we have to ask. We are an international media organization and we do want to tell Africans what is going on in Africa.
Of course, that is our job.
That's right. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.